update on what to expect this week as it relates to the weather as we head toward Memorial Day weekend next weekend. I got the table talk today. A lot of things to talk about. It's local politics, national politics, situation with the Water and Power Authority. We're going to find out from Doc Sanraki if, in fact, we had rotating outages on St. Thomas over the weekend, at least on Friday night. And then also some NBA playoffs, man. It's that time of the year. Wild. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely wild. What's taking place in professional sports. But we got the Weather Service joining us on the line. Good morning. Who am I speaking with?
Good morning. This is Mary Angeles. How are you guys doing?
Mary Angeles, how are you? I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well.
Humid on St. Croix right now.
Yes. Very humid. Yes. And it will continue like that for the rest of the day. And you guys will see an increase in moisture also by midweek into the end of the work week. But at least for today, yes, it's going to remain humid, and therefore it's going to be warm because we have the southeasterly wind flow still. So usually the combination of southeasterly winds plus the humidity usually brings warmer than usual temperatures, and with that, high heat indices. As of right now, we have a heat advisory for your area, both of the islands, actually, the St. Croix and St. Thomas and St. John's. And it's going to be in effect for today through at least 6 p.m. So you guys will experience some heat indices around 108 to 111, and isolated spots could also reach higher amounts. But we'll continue to monitor that pattern. But as of right now, yes, you guys will remain, like you said, that you guys will feel that humidity levels in the island of St. Croix with warm temperatures. You guys will see later in the afternoon, could see some patches of moisture and therefore some light rainfall activity, but nothing too significant, not at least until Wednesday, that Puerto Rico and you guys will experience a slight increase in shower activity.
Can we get a marine advisory before I get back to the
sounds good. Yeah, for today, we have calm weather conditions as well as calm marine and coastal conditions. So nothing to worry about. You guys, at least the people in the island, will be able to enjoy the beaches nearby.
Okay, good.
Now, as well as the offshore Atlantic waters.
Okay, good. Now let's get back to the heat advisory, right? You said that that's mostly for St. Croix?
For both of the islands.
Both.
It includes St. John and the adjacent islands as well as St. Croix.
Okay, St. Thomas.
We also, here in Puerto Rico, we also have the heat advisory.
Okay. So St. Thomas, St. Croix, St. John, Puerto Rico, Vieques, Culebra?
As well. Yep. All of the islands currently have the heat advisory.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that is throughout the week?
We have it just for today. We usually issue it daily.
Daily, okay.
Yep. So it's just for today from 11 to 6 p.m. And then tomorrow we will monitor it to see if we need to issue another heat advisory or something else. But as of right now, we only have the heat advisory out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And like I said, you guys will experience heat indices around 108 and 111. The heat indices are basically a combination of temperature and humidity. So that's actually what the human body feels.
The patches of moisture that you talk about, that could start as early as today?
Yes. Some light patches of moisture will develop. Actually, there is some patches of moisture right now to the south of the island, so they could reach you guys probably in like an hour or so. But like I said, nothing too significant through at least midweek, when we are going to get like a trough moving across the area that is going to bring a slight increase in moisture and therefore shower activity. But for today, nothing too significant, just showers, passing showers, basically.
Mary Angeles, thank you very much. Is Ian Colon working this morning?
No, he's going to be coming in later today.
And what about Carlos Anselmi?
Carlos, no, he's not. He's out.
He's out
for a couple of days.
Okay, good. All right, good. When you see them, you tell them their friend from the Virgin Islands said hello.
I will. Okay, have a good day.
You got it. That's Mary Angeles from the weather service down there in San Juan. And yes, it's humid outside. You know what I'm saying? It's humid. Even though when I was coming in, right, I saw the weather at 82, 83 degrees, 84, which is, from a weather standpoint, absolutely perfect. You know what I'm saying? Until you come out of the car. And then you realize that the trade winds ain't flowing. And it is humid. Still and all that stuff. So, that's the bad news. Right? The good news is you could lose some weight. You know what I'm saying? Yesterday were bad. Yesterday were rough. You know what I'm saying? If you are hanging out at home and you decide, okay, I'm going someplace around anytime between 12 and 3 o'clock, and you go inside your car, when you open the car, you go sit on and roll down the window, right, and let air flow through. Check. Because it'll be hot, and the car piping hot. You know what I'm saying? Because, of course, all that heat. You know what I'm saying? So, it's the time of the year, my son. The scary part of this is May. You know what I'm saying? We didn't even get down to our warmest months, which are September and October. Not July and August. That's the mainland. Our thing is a little different down here. So, make sure you stay hydrated. Drink a lot of fluids and all that good stuff. And you could be lean, a lean, mean, beautiful machine by July, the middle of July, you know what I'm saying? Like my guy Glenn, you know what I'm saying? Glenn, all of a sudden Glenn now slim, you know what I'm saying? You know? Slim at night, you know what I'm saying? Slim at, you know? Yeah, it's like that, you know what I'm saying? It's all good. So I was watching the NBA playoffs. And there were two game sevens and a game six, right? The game six was Saturday night. And the number one seed, Oklahoma, in the Western Conference, right? The number one seed, Oklahoma City Thunder. They were trailing 3-2. And played a game six in Dallas. And I believe they were, when I was watching the game, they were leading by 15, 16 points at halftime. And ended up losing the game in the last 2.5 seconds. They were leading by one. And their star player fouled a player for Dallas while they were shooting a three-point shot, PJ Washington. Their star player is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And he made the first two free throws, right? That's FT, right? First two free throws. And Oklahoma City didn't have any timeouts left, so he missed the third one on purpose, and they didn't have time to call timeout. They didn't have the ability to call a timeout to set up a play and move the ball to half court, so they ended up winning that series, and now they're in the Western Conference Finals. Right? One of the things I want to say about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, that's the star player for the Oklahoma City Thunder. His mother is from Antigua. A lot of people didn't know that. You know what I'm saying? His dad is from Canada. Right? Let me pull this up here. There's a friend of mine. I think there's Bai, my godfather. Tell me that, right? All your life. Yeah, Gilgeous was born in Toronto, Ontario, and grew up in Hamilton, Ontario. His mother, Charmaine Gilgeous, right, is a former track athlete who competed in the women's 400 meters for Antigua and Barbuda in the 1992 Summer Olympics. Okay? Yeah, and she was born her nationality is Antigua and Barbuda. Right? Okay. Right? His father, Von Alexander, coached him as a youth. So it's nice to see that he takes both his mom's and father's name. Now his name is Shea Gilligas Alexander. I'm saying that he actually finished second in the MVP voting this year. Right? So again, you know, the roots from the Caribbean. I know Doc Skoll and Rocky and Rami are loving this. Right? We got it going on down here. Right? So Dallas moved on. That's Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving and Jason Kidd and all that, Jason Kidd and all that stuff, right? Now, yesterday in the early game, the first of two game sevens yesterday, the New York Knicks were playing the Indiana Pacers. To that point, in the first six games, the home team had won every game, right? And that game yesterday was on the Knicks' home floor in Madison Square Garden. And unfortunately for the Knicks, they fell behind early. I think they were trailing by like 12 or 11 at the end of the first quarter. And they never got all the way back. They cut it to as low as 6 in the third quarter. But after that, Indiana just wore them down. And the primary reason for the Knicks not advancing was because they've had a lot of injuries. Not taking anything away from Indiana. Indiana is a nice, young team, well-coached by Rick Carlisle, who used to coach the Dallas Mavericks when they won and was their coach when they won the championship back in 2011. But at the end of the day, and Calvert White and I spoke about this, Commissioner White, just hard, man. It's just hard. If you don't have the players and the bodies, at some point, the longer the series is, the likelihood your team is going to wear down. So Indiana, you know, won handily yesterday, and they are now going on to the finals. They'll be playing the Boston Celtics, who's in the Eastern Conference Finals, I believe, for the sixth time in the last 8 seasons, they've been in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they've made it to the finals, I believe, once. So, but they had the best record in NBA this year, so we'll see how that pans out. And then last night, the defending champs, the Denver Nuggets, they were at home trying to advance and defend the title. In that series, the road team had won 4 out of the first 6 games, but the home team had won the last 2 games. Denver had won game 5 in Denver, and Minnesota had won game 6 in Minnesota. And Denver were leading by 20 points early in the third quarter. And Minnesota showed a lot of resolve and fatigue kicked in for Denver. Minnesota had higher vitality levels, better execution. Minnesota came back, and went up by as many as 10. That's a 30-point swing. And ultimately won the game 98-90. Knocked out the defending champions. And Minnesota is now moving on to the conference finals, where they will play Dallas beginning, I believe, on Wednesday. The Eastern Conference Finals will start tomorrow, I believe, with Boston and Indiana. So there'll be no defending champs for the sixth consecutive season. Beginning in 2019, when Toronto won, knocking out the defending champions, Golden State, and 2020, the Lakers, 21, Milwaukee, 2022, Warriors again, 2023, the Nuggets, and now we have a new champion this year. But, I mean, the biggest winners to me are the fans, because a lot of these series, 3 of them went at least 6 games, 2 of them went to 7 games, none of them were a sweep. So the TV networks made money. And the fans had a lot of basketball that we're watching. So it's going to be interesting to see how the playoffs pan out Going forward, we have the Dallas Mavericks and the Minnesota Timberwolves in the Western Conference, and the Indiana Pacers and the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference. And the winner of those two series will play in the NBA Finals. Now, the one thing I want to say, right, is that people keep talking, and the same thing applies in politics and a lot of other things. People keep talking like as if one player wins games by themselves. No, sir. In a team sport, the team that win the game, no one player could beat five players by themselves. And it was interesting to see with Minnesota last night, their best player, Anthony Edwards, who looked to me like he got Caribbean roots. Every time I see I just see one of we. You know, check. He didn't play well. And he'd been averaging 30 points a game. And last night, in the first half, they had him at lockdown that he only scored 4 points when they were trailing by 15 at the half. But his teammates came up big. Karl Anthony Towns and Jaden McDaniels kept them closer than they would have been. And they ended up scoring 22 points apiece. He only scored 16. He missed 18 out of his 24 shots. But in the end, they stuck together. And that's stick-to-itiveness, you know. That Clark Kellogg terminology there that me and Doc Skull like to use. Stick together, you're going to win. Now, on WNBA side, that's not happening with Alia Boston's team, the Indiana Fever. They're struggling to come out of the gate. They've lost their first three games. And we'll see if they could turn it around. They're still learning each other. Caitlin Clark is playing okay. You know, Aaliyah ain't playing as sharp as she did when she came into the league last year, but the season's still early. You know, they've only played three games, and they played three games against two of the better teams in the league. Right? The Connecticut team and the New York team. So hopefully they could come back and get their legs underneath them and have a good season and get some chemistry and all that stuff. So, interesting. We'll see what's going on. We'll take a break when we come back. We'll talk some tennis also with the boys on the table talking a little bit. We'll be back right after this.
St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
Morning Edition takes you across this country and around the world with stories that keep you informed and the context to understand what matters. The news comes at you quickly, but we slow it down to examine each story from different angles and give perspective on what might happen next. A brand new day comes with new possibilities and a new edition of Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
You know a good story when you hear it. Makes you feel, laugh, think. Sometimes you get a little teary. I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday, and each week we bring you stories from around the country and around the world. Stories that help you learn, make you smile, catch you by surprise. Please join us every Saturday for the news you need and the stories you won't forget.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Weekday mornings are a juggle, sometimes even a struggle.
Yeah.
Morning Edition from NPR News eases you into your day and keeps you company through the chaos of a busy morning. Hear interviews that give you context on the day's biggest stories, along with reporting and updates on the latest breaking news. Stay on top of the world with Morning Edition every weekday.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
And we're back here and analyze this, and I should be hearing from the boys in a little bit. You know, we're probably the only station that likes to talk a little tennis. You know what I'm saying? But that's what you get on an NPR station. You know what I'm saying? Everybody talks about the popular team sports, but, you know, we talk about everything. The French Open starts on Sunday, right? That's the second Grand Slam of the year. And yesterday, Alexander Zverev won the key tune-up event for that, the Rome International. And that's incredible because 2 years ago, he tore three ligaments in his ankle in the semifinals of the French Open against Nadal. And to see him come back and come all the way back and win a Masters 1000, that's good for him. And then Sabalenka, she lost to Swiatek. Number one beat number two on Saturday, so order was restored on the ladies' side over the weekend. I got Doc Skoll joining me on the line. Good morning to the handle, Outer Scene Thomas. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Mr. President. I'm doing well. I'm giving thanks, and good morning to the viewing and listening audience, man. I'm doing well.
You know how it is. You know how it is. Good every time, right? Big every time. You know
Big every time.
You know how that is. Are you in here for Rocky yet?
Well, I ain't hear from him. He might call me, and then I'll merge.
Okay, good thing. And then I haven't heard from Ronnie, so maybe he could call on the other line as well. So we'll figure that out in a little bit. So we're heading towards the French Open. Your boy Sinner, I didn't realize he had a hip injury.
Yeah, Sinner out.
So he's not going to play in the French Open?
I don't know if he's going to play.
I know they said there were injury concerns for Sinner. He got a hip problem, and Alcaraz got a right forearm problem. You check what I'm saying? So injuries are touching up the two players, and then they say this year's French Open starts next Sunday, and Zverev has established himself among the favorites again, especially with top-ranked Novak Djokovic and 14-time Roland Garros champion Nadal both struggling lately. Djokovic and Nadal were eliminated in the second and third rounds, respectively, in Rome. So the opportunity is presenting itself for guys who have never won the French Open to win it. But, Docs, you realize what I just read? Rafael Nadal win the French Open 14 times?
Yeah, that's the king of clay, man.
That's the king of clay, indeed. Yes, sir. Wow, you know, just to win a tournament, in particular a Grand Slam, 14 times? Wow.
Yeah, Nadal's game was suited for that clay, man. The ability to keep the ball in play all the time.
I doing the math in my head, right? You know, play seven matches, right? To get to if you're in the finals, right?
Right.
So you win, if you win 14 times 7 is 98. Then that's just the wins alone, 98. Yeah. What about the other years when he might have make it to the third or fourth round or to the semifinals? Wow. That's a lot of wins, my son. He really is the king of clay for sure, my son.
Yeah, he's the king of clay, right? He ain't playing it wrong, but as part of time, Neville, you know.
Undefeated, B.
Yeah, part of time is undefeated, and injuries and start coming in when you start aging, and the recovery process, really.
That's the key.
You can get injured anytime, but the recovery process.
That's the key.
Because right now, Neville, I'm feeling all the football injuries that I had.
Me too.
Yes, I've got my back, my knee, my all over, my knee, I just, it's just rough. So
I learn basketball and bowling. Them little bowling nicks and knacks that watch it, that just touching me up now, reminding me about myself. We got another athlete on the line, the one and only Ronnie Russell from St. Croix. He's a track and field star for the Virgin Islands. Good morning, Counselor. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning to you and your wonderful audience and Ducks and Rocky. And, you know, it's
morning.
It's a beautiful day. Morning.
It is. A human in the Virgin Islands in the middle of Mameson. This is humidity, Pops.
Wow. Yeah.
This is humidity, Mr. Jason. Good. Wow. Well, we could use some moisture. Got it. We had it'll be like a good week now. We had no rain, but we could use it. Yo, let me ask you this question. You were a professional, you're an athlete. You're an athlete.
High-level athlete.
He was an international athlete representing the Virgin Islands, right?
Right.
What was it like when you're there in these big arenas, because the biggest arenas in the world are the track and field arenas, right? That's the biggest setting, right? What they're about?
Yeah, definitely.
And it's humid like this. And you got to drink fluids, but then you got to drink. You go be carefully among the fluids you're taking in. What was that balancing act like?
You got to sort of have a plan, you know, because when you're going up to compete, whether it is a high level sprint or a high level long distance race, you got to plan what you eat and when and how you eat. So it becomes very important, Neville. The humidity, like running in Mexico City was a crazy thing because...
That's altitude, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what altitude. So when we started to train and you know, get ready for the meet, we go in a day, you know, couple days, all you take a run, you're not accustomed to altitude. And your body, you know, don't adjust that quick. So, you know, I ran the 200 then and I felt I was dying after that. Seriously. You know, you can't, you ain't getting enough oxygen to your body.
Yeah.
And you run at 200 and it's, you know, it's a distance. And you have long time to recover, you know, long time, because recovery means getting oxygen to your body in a way that you're not accustomed to, because it's less oxygen and it's high altitude. So, you know, so you got to adjust. You have to adjust to the climate. And most of the athletes go a week, 2 weeks before if the climate is different, so they could adjust, whether it is humidity, whether it's, you know, hot sun, whether it's cold weather. You have to adjust, because you can't perform on the same level that you are accustomed in training in a different environment so easy. So mm-hmm. you can't adjust. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. you know, it takes real adjustment. And what happened, the sprinters that did really well in 68, you remember?
Yeah, Jim Hines set the world record at the 68 Olympics. And that was there for a long, long time. As a matter of fact, that lasts for about 15 years. Until Calvin Smith took it down at altitude again in Colorado Springs. Yeah.
But they trained in altitude. Okay. So when they went to Mexico City, they were ready.
Mm-hmm.
And they really, you know, ran really fast times and everything. All of the athletes from the U.S. did really well.
Yeah. Tommy Smith and Jan Carlos.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they had trained to prepare, just like what we said, to prepare so that they could run in altitude faster. And remember, the air is a little thinner up there, you know. So you don't have the resistance that, and the, you know, the same resistance with the air and the sort of drag that you have to run against.
Mm-hmm.
They were, so in high altitude, you run faster times. And they did. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing. Adjusting to all different types of climates and everything. And the beauty about it is, Neville and everybody, that you expressing an attitude of your country. Your country belong there, and you expressing, you representing
a group of people, and that's when the camaraderie comes in, because all of these athletes there for the same reason. They're really enthusiastic about doing what they do, and they have a good attitude about representing the country. And that's what really Olympics is about. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, but you know, Docs, you know, we talk a lot of politics on our show. I found out sitting in this chair that 68 Olympics, the Virgin Islands got some linkage to it, you know, Paul Hoffman, right? Paul Hoffman was a rower, right? He went to Harvard, and he wanted to be a rower in the Summer Olympics team, and apparently he was the one who passed the gloves to either Tommy Smith or John Carlos. Remember when they were doing the Black Power thing and the podium, the man pull up the hand, right? With the Black Power. Apparently, what Paul Hoffman for, no, you know me. I've never met Paul Hoffman, but we had someone in common that he was very close with that I didn't like. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah. Paul Hoffman was my sixth grade teacher.
Yeah, you told me that. Down at Grand Boko, right?
Down at Grand Boko School.
Yeah.
They had Chigenza.
Yeah. 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 So apparently, Leslie Commission was the one who had told me about it. And then I had pulled up this story on the Washington Post back in 2018, where they talked about the forgotten story of the Harvard rowers who supported Tommy Smith and John Carlos, right? And that Harvard rower actually been living here in the Virgin Islands for donkey years.
Hoffman. And he and I were close, Neville, mm-hmm. because of my teacher down at Grand Boko School. And throughout the years, he used to check up, and I used to go to his office, and he has a picture. I don't know if he's still practicing law. He has a picture of that event, and he explained to me exactly what happened, how it happened, you know. And he himself faced a lot of criticism too. Mm-hmm. And the guy from Australia who was on the podium, he was ostracized and was really treated. When he went back to Australia, I think he was banned from the team.
Correct.
You know, when he went back. But that was an awesome time, my brother. That was an awesome. Carlos and what's his name were awesome.
Yeah, Tommy Smith.
Presentation, my brother.
Yeah. Well, I will always remember that name, Carlos, last name Carlos, because that's my mother's last name. You know what I'm saying? So, you check? So, but this article, it's a long article too. A Washington Post article from October 9, 2018. And Ronnie, you know, I can forward this to both of you so you could see it. And one of the sections of the article, Ronnie, is higher altitude.
Yeah.
You check? And they talk about that, and I think the games were in October. Right?
Yes.
Which is very rare for the Olympics, right? But that year the Olympics was in October, and they said Hoffman went to the Olympic Stadium for the track and field events October 16th. That happened to be the day the men's 200-meter final were set. No, where Smith set a world record and Carlos finished third, just 400ths of a second behind Australia's Peter Norman. That's what you're talking about. That's what you're talking about there on Doug's School, right?
Yeah.
And they say Hoffman had been seated in the stands near the wives of Smith and Carlos. The sprinters passed by the group as they walked out of the tunnel for the medal ceremony. Norman spotted the OPHR buttons and approached Hoffman. He said, "Hey, mate, have you got another one of those buttons?" Right? Norman wore the button, right, and stood stoically as the Star Spangled Banner played and Smith and Carlos raised their fists in the air. Norman returned to Australia a pariah of sorts for standing in solidarity with the protesting Americans, and his actions weren't celebrated there until long after his 2006 death. So, politics, even in sports, Ronnie, right? Here we are, 50, that would be 50, 56 years ago, 1968, right?
Yeah.
56
yeah.
years ago, and politics even permeated its way into the highest profile sports event in the world, the Olympiad.
Yeah, you know, that is a testament to when there are atrocities going on in the world, people just can't do a blind eye to it. Regardless of what they're doing, they are affected by that. And, you know, in the 60s in America, the Vietnam War, a lot of things were happening. And sports weren't immune to anything. And it was a really new type of protest to go into sports, and people weren't accustomed to it, you know.
But racial it shows that racial tensions, because here we are 56 years later, and we still got some of the same arguments, same challenges, same concerns that people of color were facing 56 years ago, 60 years ago, in the 60s. Remember now, the 60s is one of the, you know, most transitional decades, you know, transformational decades, I should say, in American history, because the Civil Rights Act, right, of 64.
Yeah.
And a lot of different things happened. And here we are now, where people of color, and not just black people, but people of color, you know, they're being targeted. You know, and let's face it, MAGA it might be about make America great again, but we all know that that's just a euphemism for what it really means. You know what I'm saying? So it is what it is.
Yeah, and it's cyclic. You know, the things come along.
That's right.
In a funny way.
That's right. Matter of fact, in that 68 Olympics, back then, remember all college athletes used to represent the U.S.
Exactly.
And I believe Lew Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he actually protested and wasn't on the U.S. Olympic team in 68. And they had that big meeting, that great photo with him, Bill Russell, Jim Brown. We got a couple others in that photo. Doc School, help me up. Muhammad Ali in the photo?
Muhammad Ali.
Yep.
Yeah.
Look now. That might be the greatest sports photo in the history of sports.
Yeah,
I ain't even on the playing field. It's at a desk, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk some more politics here, and how you know, we as a people got to live together. Ducks, I need an update on Unit 15 for in St. Thomas as to what happened over the weekend. Okay. So we'll take a break and be back right after this.
Human beings have been making music for tens of thousands of years. It brings us together. It has the power to communicate emotions and ideas. It's a profound part of the human experience. Hear the stories behind the music you love and new music you might fall in love with. I'm Raina Duris. Join me for in-depth interviews with artists who are continuing that musical history on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we are not afraid to stand up to the high and mighty like Jeff Bezos.
He had that big cowboy hat on. He looked like a shrink ray had hit Garth Brooks.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join me as we speak truth to power, at least until power agrees to buy us out, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. I wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday. In these divided times, what could be more important
and a conversation. Conversation with someone we don't know, someone we think we know, someone with whom we disagree or think we do. Join us as we ask questions of politicians, ranchers, parents, athletes, activists, gardeners, writers, and lots more. Then listen along with you.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTGX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we're back here on Analyze This. The table talk is in effect. We got Ronnie Russell joining me on Fonkina Ridge. Good morning, Mr. President, 29th Legislature. How are you? Morning, Ronnie. Looks like we might have lost Ronnie there. Good morning, Doug Skoll, Mr. Majority Leader, 30th Legislature. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. President. Doing well. The sun is out and it's heating up.
I tell you. So before we do that, I just got a text message. Ducks, Nevis lose a great Nevisian man, Lester Blackett. You know that name?
I've heard of the name Lester Blackett.
Yeah. He was a director of Nevis Disaster Management Department, and he was a civil engineer, right? But what one of the things he's known for is under his guidance, the Nevis Disaster Management was among the first in the Caribbean to establish a website setting a precedent for digital advancement in disaster preparedness. So, again, Nevis again, man.
Nevis again, Nevis running things. But I want to also tell you something in sports.
Yeah.
I forgot the name of the brother, but the first St. Kitts born cricket player made it to the West Indies team.
Finally,
after 95 years. The first, I forgot his name, he made it to the West Indies team. So he, you know, so that's an awesome
accomplishment, because for all these years, All of the representatives on the West Indies cricket team from St. Kitts Nevis had come from Nevis.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's a great accomplishment. He's a batsman.
Wow.
So I look forward to see him produce. And one of the things with West Indies selectors, you from the small island, you better produce. Otherwise, the man will get rid of you.
Yeah. But if they know the history of West Indies cricket, Michael Lewis. Right? Mikhail Lewis. That's the name, Doc School.
That's the name, okay. Mikhail Lewis. Mikhail Lewis.
Yeah. St. Kitts' first player selected for West Indies Test cricket team. I hear you, man. So St. Kitts can't complain. They can't ball no more, right?
They can't ball no more. They're rejoicing.
And you and Roosevelt been teasing them for years. I you go back off a little bit now?
Yeah, because you know back then there is you call us Small Island, you know what I mean? But the Small Island produced the first selection to the West Indies team. His name El Comido Willis.
El Comido Willis, yeah.
Yeah, the first to be selected to the West Indies team, and then we went down with four or five of them.
Yeah.
Parry, Williams.
But you know. If West Indies cricket know about winning, they would have more Leeward Islands members and the West Indies team instead of all them big, them Great Antilles Islands and Guyana and Trinidad.
And even Anguilla got one, got a couple players.
Okay, that's good.
From and the West Indies team. I don't even remember this guy, Banky Bank.
Yeah, man.
His son, I forget his name, Banks, he played on the West Indies team.
Okay.
He was a spin bowler, you know.
You know, Ronnie, you back on the line yet?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. People don't realize that West Indies cricket team in the 70s and 80s, that were really one of the greatest teams in all of sports, you know. Not just cricket, you know. Sports, you know.
Yeah.
when you think about the quality of players they had on that team, and could you imagine, right? The team is made up of players coming from different islands, man. That's the beauty of the West Indies cricket team, right? Of course, everybody knows Vivian Richards was a star, right?
Yeah.
But they had great bowlers, and Vivian Richards wasn't only the great batsman, they had a man named Gordon Greenidge out of Barbados, right?
Yeah.
He was the opening bat. Haynes, right? Another Bajan, right? Yeah,
Desmond Haynes, yes.
It had somebody else too, man. Another great batsman.
It had this fellow from Jamaica, they call him the Whispering Death.
Michael Holden, yeah, man. He was a great bowler. Andy Roberts, right?
Andy Roberts.
Out of
Antigua.
Out of Antigua. Look, there, man, that team there won no joke, my son.
The team was the great Clive Lloyd, who was the captain.
He was a captain, yeah.
He captained the team. He was from Guyana. The great Clive Lloyd was the captain of that team, and they destroyed. I mean, the game of cricket, Neville, the rules changed after that team. You remember how they changed the rules when Tiger was ripping up the golf course?
Yeah, yeah.
And they changed the rules because West Indies produced, like, they had four speed bowlers. They call them pace bowlers, right?
Yeah.
Because a team is usually constructed of the fast bowler and the slower bowler that spin ball. They bowl a ball like they call spin, like a curve ball in baseball.
No, it's either pace or spin. Right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So they had four pace bowlers. And a bouncer, right, is a high-pitched ball. When it bounces, it comes up, it knocks you out if it hits you. So the ICC, the Cricket Federation, changed the rule that you can only bowl one bouncer in an over.
Over
is six balls.
Six balls, right?
So you could only bowl one bouncer because that was the delivery, Neville, that dominated that era. So in order to curtail the power of the West Indies with its fast bowling, they decided, no, you guys can't come in here and intimidate us and take us like this with fast, pace bowlers. And so you can only bowl one bouncer. So that really curtailed the attack, and these guys that changed the game of cricket.
So the West Indies had influence on modern day cricket from back in the 70s then?
Big time. Wow,
Ronnie, I was going to ask you this question. What is it about the Caribbean that we have the fastest runners in the world, ready? The sprinters. I mean, this is just ridiculous, the amount of speed we're showing now. And guess who's starting to win a lot of sprint races now? The motherland, Africa, yeah. Ronnie. I watch you, what's going on there. Africa's starting to produce a lot of sprinters.
It's a testament to a sort of, I think, a environment that you start something good, Neville, and your young people emulate and follow. And if you start with something really good and people follow, then you, in two or three decades, you become the forefront of what is you started. And that's something that, in basketball, America, and you could name the sports because you mentioned in cricket, but and the West Indies did really well then, but it's a English sport, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I want the people to know that some people might want to think, but wait, how come that man talking about cricket? Cricket was a dominant sport in the Virgin Islands long before the American sport there, man.
Yeah, man.
Exactly.
In the U.S. Virgin Islands, right, Jasop? Right?
Yeah.
D.C. Kanegeta was a great cricketer.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Lionel Roberts, right?
Yeah. It was a serial pace bowler, man.
the man them who toured the stadium name after in the Virgin Islands were great cricketers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And cricket was big because my grandmother told me about that.
It was a highfalutin thing, though. It was a socialite thing, you know, Rani?
Yeah.
Right?
Where Clado Marcus School was built, used to be, from my grandmother tell me, it used to be a cricket pitch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they built a school there.
And Doug School, they used to drink tea, not tea, tea.
Because in the test game,
yeah,
the highest farmer game, they have a break that's called tea.
Yeah. But
and Neville, Edith Williams, the great educator, she was a very great female cricket player.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Edith Williams.
Wow. Wow.
Great Edith Williams.
And the reason why we got to hold on to this history, right, is because the first two World Cup tournaments in 1975 and 1979 were won by the West Indies, man.
Yeah, man. That's when we had the team, man.
What is it called? The Golden Boys or some kind of name? They had a documentary on them, right? Yeah. I think the name, I'm trying to find the name, but I think it came back to me. I didn't find the name of them. We know of Holden. They had a dude named Gaines or something.
You had the Holden.
They had it was the four horsemen, the great bowlers. Because Stumpy them the thing about it. Yeah.
Marshall.
Yes. He from Jamaica, right?
No, he from Barbados.
He from Barbados. Who was the one from Jamaica?
Jamaica was Welch.
Courtney Walsh. Michael Holden.
Michael Holden.
Marshall from Barbados, and there was another one. Some Gaines. It began with a G.
Andy Roberts out of Antigua,
correct. But there was another one. They had that. Oh, that's what it was. They had five top bowlers, and they only went with four.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
And all of them were pace bowlers, Neville. That's what I was telling
you.
And that's when the man changed up the rules.
No, Wallace Williams was the one who told me about Blackett, and he said Blackett was also big with sports.
Blackett was big with sports in Nevis and throughout the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now let me ask this question. Nevis still want to secede from
Listen.
From the Federation.
a lot of thing times the timing, Neville.
Yeah.
When they had that secession vote.
Yeah.
It was prime for them. It's similar to, I put that similar to the Constitution of the Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
It's the timing. I think it has gone now where the timing ain't going to come where you're able to do that secession anymore. And that's why we see how it is. They're not going to secede anymore because they can't get the numbers based on the constitutional tenet that you have to reach in order to secede. I don't think the numbers are going to be there. Similar to how we have here in the Virgin Islands with our constitution where, you know, that native issue that curtailed that last constitution, which I think, and I know you guys Friday were talking about a constitution, or some day ago when you guys were on, that is an issue that I think timing, that has passed. We can move on.
Hey, Terry T just sent me a text. One of the great nicknames in the history of St. Thomas, they got my name Smut, right?
Smut Richards.
Smut Richards out of Smith Bay. Terry T said that he was a great cricket player, too. Wow.
Yeah, Smut.
I thought Smut was a baseball man, but then again, that man could have probably played both sports. It wasn't a big thing, you know what I mean? But
yeah, but both sports work.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, listen, I grew up with baseball, and I went to Dominica with my wife. And they were playing cricket, and I licked the ball.
I like that one. Hey, Ducks, I find the name Joel Garner. That's
Joel
the name.
Out of Barbados.
That's the bowler. Yeah. That was the bowler. You check?
It's calling Big Bird.
Yeah, big. Yes. They had five great bowlers on that team. You know what I'm saying?
Big Bird.
Yeah. But and Vivian Richards, right? They say in the final match. Yeah, century 138.
Yes.
Hey.
Master Blaster. No bowler holds that era to Vivian Richards.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Look, Imran Khan, the recently removed president of Pakistan, right? That's from Pakistan, right?
Yeah, Imran Khan.
Imran Khan, right? when they ask him, who is the greatest cricket player you ever played against?
Yeah.
Right? And he, yeah. Remember now, he's a big wig, because he is married to one of them socialites, a white lady in England, right?
Yeah.
And they asked, they did an interview, was on ESPN, the website, and they said, who's the greatest bowler you ever play against? And he said, without a doubt, Vivian Richards. He said Vivian Richards was a complete genius. Now, Ronnie and Ducks and the audience, I have heard the term genius, and that is all encompassing, right? But when I hear a man refer to Vivian Richards as a complete genius, I say, but wait, me never know he had a complete genius, right? but basically, when I think about it, here's what he was saying. Not only did he have the physical talents, he also had the mental fearlessness, right? Because they say, out of all the batsmen them, the great batsmen them, Vivian Richards never wear a helmet yet.
Absolutely, and I thought that's where you were going, right?
Ali, he wear a cap.
that helmet came into cricket, Neville, after the West Indies, with them pace bowlers knocking man out all the time, you know.
Oh, okay, that's it. See, it's cycling back to what you were talking about earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, the crash helmet.
The crash helmet, yeah. And they say, all Vivian Richards do is put a cap on his head and he tell them, you bring it, man.
Bring it on, and he does. Like Sasha say, fast and slowly, you're going back to
the boundary. Yeah, man. big tune. And this is the heyday of the West Indies, you know.
Yeah.
The late 70s into the early 80s. You ain't want the guts of that West Indies cricket team. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're gonna continue this great conversation. We're talking about Caribbean dominance. We'll take a break. We'll be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
The PBS NewsHour has a rich legacy of in-depth reporting and strong storytelling.
Only four people have sat in that chair before us, and the enormity of this moment is not lost on me. People turn to us because they know they can hear from trusted sources of information and news.
That won't change a bit, even as the faces behind the desk change.
Good evening. I'm Jeff Bennett.
And I'm Amna Nawaz.
Weekdays at 7 p.m. on WTJX-TV, Channel 12.